Hi, it's Bob from Royal Spa. Soaking in a hot tub full of Epsom salts is the absolute best way to minimize everyday aches and pains. And we know all about Epsom salts at Royal Spa. Royal Spa hot tubs are the only hot tubs on the market that can safely and effectively use Epsom salts. Made right here in Indiana, Royal Spa hot tubs are the highest quality hot tubs on the market. Visit any one of our three Indianapolis locations or visit royalspa.com.
Ah, Royal Spa.
This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
Don't want to waste any time with our next guest. He's one of our favorites. You've heard him on these airways before, courtesy of Westwood One, CBS Sports, the Ross Tucker Podcast. He is at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter. Ross Tucker joining us to talk some NFL draft here as Christmas Day, 12 hours from now, begins. Ross, we have analyzed and overanalyzed, and our eyes are bleeding at mock drafts. What is the somewhat common draft theme you've heard in this cycle that you couldn't disagree with more?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think the thing that I'm most interested in this morning is two guys I really respect that do a pretty darn good job with their mock drafts, Peter Schrager and Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network. They both have the exact same top six. That doesn't happen very often, guys. Do you remember when we were younger, when it was like we kind of knew who the first four, five, six picks were going to be? Like, you know, you kind of knew they were going to take him, then they were going to take him, then they were going to take him. That's kind of what it feels like to me, and I thought that was really intriguing to see that they had and no trades in the first six picks, and they had those guys exactly the same. I thought that was really interesting. I guess the narrative right now, I don't know that I disagree with it, but six quarterbacks going in the top half of the first round just sounds like an absolute disaster to me. And I wrote about it this week for the 33rd team. What an awful position the Minnesota Vikings and Denver Broncos are in, where you're drafting 11th and 12th, and the top three teams all need quarterbacks, are going to take quarterbacks. So you're somewhat, you know, battling or competing to trade up to get the fourth best guy. And that just sounds like a horrible process. And maybe it'll work out, right? Maybe the fourth best guy ends up being the best guy. Maybe he ends up being Mahomes. I don't know. I'm just saying, if you did that every year, if you battled another team to trade a bunch of picks to move up to get the fourth quarterback on the board, that sounds to me, guys, like something that's going to fail at a very, very high rate over time.
Yeah, and just to reiterate, those first six picks Ross is alluding to, you've got the three QBs, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and then Marvin Harrison Jr., four to Arizona, J.C. Latham, the offensive tackle out of Bama to the Chargers, and then Malik Nabers to Andy's Giants there at six. Anything you would, I don't know, maybe push back on or anything out of that first six that jumps out at you? I know the Nabers talk has been, you know, a little rampant here. Maybe J.C. Latham above Joe Alt. Anything stand out?
Yeah, I think two things. One, this late push for J.C. Latham. You know, I mean, I think most people thought that Joe Alt was a better prospect, thought that Olu Fashanu was a better prospect, even, you know, Talese Fuaga. Some people thought Fatanu was better. So for Latham to be the first O lineman off the board and that high at five would really be interesting. I mean, he is an extremely powerful, gifted young man, but there are some concerns there in terms of consistency, in terms of when the picture changes. You know, I think what people lose sight of with offensive line is these are moving targets, and I think a lot of times, you know, I've seen so many guys with physical ability. I played for five teams over 7 years that when the team would move right before the snap, they just couldn't process quickly enough to block the right guy. And that's you can't play that way. I mean, if you make a mental error in the NFL, it's a strip sack. You probably get the quarterback hurt. Probably a strip sack for a fumble return for a touchdown, you lose the game. But you can't have guys out there that don't block the right guys. And that was a little bit of a concern that I had heard about Latham. The other thing that's fascinating to me, guys, and you guys aren't in the quarterback markets, maybe people in Indy don't care, but I think it's interesting. I had so many guys I really respect come on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast over the last 6 weeks. Quarterback guys, right? Like Phil Sims, Chase Daniel, Greg Cosell, you know, over and over again. I've heard Lewis Riddick, Orlovsky. They all love Jaden Daniels, love him. And he's projected to go number two right now after Caleb Williams. But a lot of them, you could just tell, they kind of thought he was a better prospect than Caleb Williams. And then they all had major concerns about Drake May, called him raw. Phil Sims said his video was his tape was disappointing. Misses layups. Somebody said he doesn't have throw-to-throw accuracy. So to me, you know, I'm not one of these guys that's going to, like, sit there and come on your show in Indy and be like, oh, he just has bad footwork. Like, I don't know about a quarterback's footwork. I think most of the people that say that are full of crap. But here's what I do know. The people I have on, I really respect. They all love Jaden Daniels, who's going two. They all have major concerns about Drake May. Sounds like he's going three. Isn't that weird? Like, I mean, you never have a consensus. You never have anything sort of unanimous. That was unanimous. The praise for Jaden Daniels and the concerns of Drake May.
I love it. I can't wait for tonight, Ross. The unpredictability is always fun. Ross Tucker with us. He's got the podcast, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, CBS Sports, Westwood One. Many places you can find him at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter X as well. I kind of think the draft begins at pick three. Do the Patriots stay there? Do they take, you know, someone other than a quarterback, or do they take their quarterback, or do they get a haul and trade out? You mentioned the Vikings, perhaps the Giants, the Broncos as well. If you were running the New England Patriots, what would Ross Tucker do at three?
Yeah, so they're gonna take a quarterback, I think. And, you know, obviously, I don't think drafting another player is really an option. I think it's you take the quarterback or you trade down with Minnesota or Denver or somebody that wants one of these quarterbacks, right? I don't think taking Harrison or some other player is really a viable choice. For them, you know, not to simplify it, but if I love the quarterback, that's who I would take. I can't do it on Drake May. I can't do it. I mean, I can't have all these guys come on my show that I respect. I mean, why am I having them on my show if they're all going to tell me bad things about Drake May and I'm going to take them anyway? No, I'm not doing it. So I think I would trade down if I were the Patriots. You know, everybody's talking about, oh, next year's draft won't be that good at quarterback. Really? Because I'm pretty confident Quinn Ewers, Shedeur Sanders, I just feel like a year from now, and there's going to be another guy or two, Carson Beck from Georgia, there's going to be enough guys that emerge. There will be three first-round pick quarterbacks next year. So if I'm the Patriots and the Vikings are desperate to get up to three or the Broncos or whatever, I think I trade down. I get a king's ransom, you know, to do it, three first-round picks or whatever you get based on recent years, you know, Trey Lance trade and others. And I trade down, and I get an awesome football player at wide receiver or at left tackle and stockpile picks for future years because my team is bad anyway. And I'm not in love with the third quarterback off the board, especially Drake May, based on everybody I've talked to.
You mentioned a lot of Drake May, J.J. McCarthy. What do you make of him? What of all the experts you've had on? Boy, a lot of people in the NFL love his winning attitude. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit surprised that, and maybe it's because he wasn't that highly thought of necessarily coming into the year. I guess I'm a little bit surprised that he's considered by most to be the fourth guy. And Jaden Daniels just had, I mean, you got the last two Heisman Trophy winners, and I get that. And so they've put more production out. I guess I'd be curious to see what would have happened if roles were reversed. You know, if J.J. McCarthy went somewhere where they threw the ball all the time. There's some people that are always going to have that concern about, well, why did Harbaugh run the ball on third and eight, you know, when you have a quarterback that if he's a first-round guy. And I guess the answer I would say is I just don't think you can judge someone by what they weren't asked to do. I think that's really unfair. Harbaugh likes to run the ball. I mean, he might take J.C. Latham at five. You know, Harbaugh, when he had Andrew Luck at Stanford, it's not like he was throwing the ball all over the place. Now, Luck had good numbers, and Luck threw the ball quite a bit, but it's not like it was the air raid. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, you know, most other colleges, if they had Andrew Luck, they'd throw the ball every play. Stanford still ran the ball a lot when they had Andrew Luck. So that's just who Jim Harbaugh is and wants to be. And I don't think you should judge J.J. McCarthy harshly for that. I think the thought process is Drake May is a little bit bigger. Drake May is a little bit faster. Drake May has a little bit of a better arm. You know, so any of these boxes that you check, the physical traits, you're going to say Drake May is better. But if that's what we're doing, then why did the Bears trade Justin Fields? Because Justin Fields is bigger than Caleb Williams. He's faster than Caleb Williams. He has a stronger arm than Caleb Williams. He's just not as good of a quarterback.
He's Ross Tucker, former NFL player, Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You see him Westwood, or hear him on Westwood One, see him on CBS Sports, been on our airwaves before. Always enjoy our convos with Ross. As we shift gears to the Colts at 15, I'll ask you to put the Chris Ballard hat on. You obviously have the young quarterback, very intriguing, 173 snaps, albeit 173 snaps, for Anthony Richardson. As they sit there in the middle of round one, Uber support for your young QB, or you dive onto the defensive side of the ball and maybe think of a young secondary needing it a little bit more?
So the Colts are an interesting team, and I would say on some level a team in a good position to be in, where I don't feel like, you know, they absolutely have to take a guy at a certain position. You know, I think that there are a number of positions where it wouldn't surprise me, right? Like, it wouldn't surprise me if one of the receivers fell, if they took him. It wouldn't shock me. I've seen a lot of people that think, you know, if Brock Bowers were to fall to 15, that the Colts could go there. That wouldn't surprise me either. You know, perhaps they take a D tackle like Byron Murphy, who a lot of people think might be the best defensive player in the draft. Corner is interesting because at 15, you know, they'd probably be able to get the, you know, maybe even the best corner in the draft, you know, whether they think that's Terrion Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell. So there's a lot of options. You know, I've seen recently, I think I saw Traeger might have had them trading up. I don't really see that. I think because of where they are with their roster, I think they're going to get a really good player that falls to them at 15, and they can select them. I think they might even be more likely to trade down than to trade up in this situation, because they're going to be able to get somebody that can really play without having to trade up. It's not like they have to get a receiver, or have to get a tackle, or have to get a quarterback like some of these other teams. And with some people having six quarterbacks going in the top 13 picks, if I'm the Colts, I'm not trading up. I'm six quarterbacks in the top 13 picks. I'm waiting right there.
Yep.
And now, first of all, I don't think it's going to happen. But if it did, man, there'd be a great pick. Who do you guys want? Who do most people in the city want?
I think it's down between corner and wide receiver. What's interesting is you mentioned just mock drafts and conversation, and Ross Tucker with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You know, Ross, Xavier Worthy, the speedster, the 4.21 40 kid out of Texas, he has shown up on two or three mock drafts within the last 24 hours. Brian Thomas on a couple of those as well. So
Quinyon Mitchell, Terrion Arnold, yeah, those are the two DBs.
We went a lot of corner for several weeks, and it feels like wide receiver has some momentum here as we get closer to tonight. Those would be the two positions, Ross.
All right, so let me ask you this. How do they feel about Jelani Woods? And if Brock Bowers is there at 15, do you want him?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest mystery. You know, we had Ballard on our show at the Combine, and you're trying to pin him down. What do you think about your tight end position? Because, like you said, they drafted Jelani Woods really high on him. Then it's a redshirt year in year two. They've also drafted three other tight ends in the middle rounds here in the last couple drafts. So I think deep down they know there's not a true elite guy in that group by any means, and the opportunity to add that to Shane Steichen, got to be salivating a little bit at it. But then, you know, the other bird on the shoulder, Ross, says – it's tight end still. And yes, great tight ends last year, but none of them were really drafted super high if you look at the final four teams, and I could see Ballard being staunch in that. So it's honestly probably the thing I'm most confused about heading into tonight with the Colts.
Yeah, man, I think that'd be a tough guy to turn down. First of all, he reminds me a lot of Dallas Clark, a lot. Secondly, I just think Shane Steichen, with all the things they want to do, go back, guys, and this will be something for somebody in your research department, look at what Dallas Goedert did the 2 years that Steichen was the offensive coordinator for the Eagles.
That's a great point.
I mean, off the charts. His yards per catch, his yards per attempt, he was number one in the NFL in yards per target. Think about that. As a 6'6", 260-pound tight end, I think for Steichen, if he were able to have, with having Richardson, having all the RPOs, right? So what that means is all these zone reads, all these RPOs where the linebackers are in a bind. They don't know if Richardson's going to run it. They don't know if they're going to give it to JT. And he pulls it and throws it to Brock Bowers. And Brock Bowers, maybe the best run-after-catch tight end prospect I've ever seen. I mean, it's unbelievable how good he is with the ball in his hands. I would be so fired up if I'm a Colts fan, if Bowers fell to 15 and they took him. Especially, look it up. Goddard, those 2 years, 21-22.
Yeah, I got it right here.
The plays, number one in the NFL yards per target, which is insanity for a big tight end.
Yeah, 10.9 and 10.2 yards per target. Just to throw some context around that, Ross, George Kittle led the league last year for tight ends at 11.3. Next on the list, though, you got to go all the way down to Mark Andrews at 8.9. So that, I think, just shows you.
And even look at receivers.
Right, I know.
You guys are talking about receiver. Look at the receivers. I mean, they don't even get that high.
Yeah, only five guys in the league.
And again, if you're not right, and if people aren't familiar, target is just how many yards they got every time they even threw in the ball. Like, it includes incompletions. You know what I mean? Like, it's just when they threw in the ball, he got 11 yards per time they threw in the ball, whether he caught it or not. Which is, I mean, that tells you what he was getting when he was actually catching the ball.
Great stuff, per usual, from Ross Tucker. Ross, we'll end with this. It's off the field. My co-host right here, Andy Sweeney. In a few weeks, he's encountering his first ever Mother's Day. I'm nervous for him. He can't screw it up.
I'm
Mother's
terrified.
Day falls before Father's Day on the calendar. It's a disservice to the male race, but whatever. We'll live with it. We didn't push the babies out. You've got an idea for him?
I do. Andy, by the way, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
That is amazing. I hope you guys are enjoying every second of it. Look, nobody knows what to get somebody for Mother's Day. I mean, I literally text my wife, Kara, and say, what should I get my mom for Mother's Day? Then I text my mom and say, what should I get Kara for Mother's Day, right? I have the answer, though, and it's something that my sister and I got my mom a couple years ago. It's called MyFrontPageStory.com. It is so easy and so awesome. You talk to a writer, professional writer, for like 10 minutes while you're driving home from work, or you can fill out an email quick. They write this amazing story about your mom, or if you want to get it for your wife, that's cool too. And it looks like it's on the cover of the Indy Star. Like, it's framed, beautiful, pictures of your mom or your wife with the kids. And I'm just telling you, like, my mom, when she read the quote from my sister, I wouldn't be the woman I am today if it weren't for my mom. She started bawling. My mom has it hanging up right next to the front door, which I think is a little bit weird, but whatever. She loves it. It's myfrontpagestory.com. How about this for stats? I can almost guarantee she'll cry. And moms are everybody's first-round pick. There's not a lot of moms that are bust. And if they
look
are, boy, that's really sad. That's another story. Anyway, get your mom myfrontpagestory.com. MyFrontPageStory.com. Best Mother's Day gift I've ever heard of.
Ross Tucker, thank you, sir.
See you, dudes.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between. Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Just quite frankly, they front runners, bro. Y'all can just tweet that whatever it is, bro. I mean, when it's going good, we laugh and clap and all that. When it's going bad, then they not saying nothing. So I think stick to answer the question. Guys always feel good when they having a good game and hitting shots. Everybody, I think that's just, you know, human nature in basketball. When you're making shots, you're feeling good. But when it's tough going, you can't get nothing going, you know, you kind of go the other way. So, yeah, they supposed to feel good. They was hitting shots. They game plan for really well. And, yeah, they supposed to feel good, of course. But game three on the way Friday.
Boy, riveting, enlightening stuff there from Bobby Portis. Tyrese Halliburton smiles when things go well, and he doesn't when things go bad. Shocking to see someone react like that on a basketball floor. Bobby Portis and company inside of Gainbridge Fieldhouse tomorrow night, 5:30. And that line, Andy Sweeney, 5.5. Pacers favored by 5.5.
Currently 5.5. That just seems like a lot of points, doesn't it? Boy, it's a lot of points.
I think it's an indicator, again, of the health and availability of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Let's start there with Scott Agnes from Fieldhouse Files. He actually had Shams Charania on his podcast last week. Scott, it's probably not usual for me to start with an opposing team injury question, but again, you had Shams on your pod. Reading tea leaves, when would you gauge a guess as to when or if we see Giannis in this series?
Yeah, good morning, Kevin. It's a situation, though, with Giannis being one of the top five players in the league, that's why I said before this series, it's the number one storyline, because if he returns and is somewhat healthy, he changes everything. And so going into the series, I think it was pretty clear that he wouldn't be available for the first weekend of games just because of the certain injury. It's an injury that you need at least a couple of weeks to be off of to even have a chance to return. And then Shams came on and I was like, so what has he been able to do? What's the latest? And he was like, yeah, he's on the court. He's moving, he's shooting. I go, oh, well, that's another week. Like, you got to be doing some physics. Also, what's his cardio like right now? Like, when he's clearly going to be out of game shape. And then when you connect the previous injuries he's had all on that left side, if I'm Giannis or the athletic trainer for the Bucks, that's uber concerning to me, because they're certainly all connected and one thing leads to another with how it's favored, right? We often see like a left hamstring lead to an ankle injury, maybe an Achilles. So I think it's kind of gloomy right now if you're Giannis. And if I had to take a stab at it, I would guess he's out for these pair of games as well and could try to come back for game five. But there's no real indication out there right now.
Scott Agnes, Fieldhouse Files, talking with him. You can check out all the good info there as we talk about Pacers and Bucks Game 3, 5:30 tomorrow in Gainbridge. Our coverage here on The Fan at 5 o'clock. You heard that Bobby Portis sound. If I could give you odds right now, who would be the odds-on favorite who's going to get into a shoving match with Bobby Portis in either Game 3 or Game 4? My money is Nesmith. I'm going to go with Nesmith. That's who I'm going to go with.
I initial reaction, Andy, would be Nembhard, but the size difference doesn't really work.
No.
But Nembhard was the one that not only has an edge, which we knew, but played with it and like was demonstrative about it, which kind of surprised me. We haven't seen that drawn out of him too much. Because of that, I'm going to go probably with Obi Toppin.
Okay,
would be my selection.
All
just
right.
Because of what we saw the last game. I would, and this is something. I think I might even go quite the opposite. I was talking with Jake about it yesterday. Aaron Nesmith, I think, the one of the last guys I'd pick, just seemingly because he seems like the guy that's just doing a little bit of everything, making sure everything's where it should be. He's putting everything back into place, so to speak. he's doing all the little details that I don't know. I don't know if Aaron would be the guy that would come out with that visual edge trying to prove a point.
Scott Agnes with us here on the Payless Liquors hotline. Besides just simply making shots, game one, the Pacers made only 8 threes, I think is what, 21% from three. And we saw how different that was in game two. They made 16 threes, 45% from 3-point range. Besides, again, just making those 3-pointers, what do you think the Pacers learned slash fixed between game one and game two?
Yeah, not bad adjustment, huh? yeah, so I think the number one thing is I think the level of which they have to come out with and play throughout the game, because that's something that we talked about all season, just the layer in which the playoffs are different. And yes, you can pretend and try to lean into throughout the regular season your bigger moments, whether it's your last game that you need to clinch a playoff spot or the in-season tournament. Still, nothing matches that level of intensity and the attention to detail that is needed. And it just was not there in game one. So I think, first of all, they realized that and could kind of have an understanding and not just be a little bit wild and unsure of themselves. Secondly, I think the pace is one of the biggest things. They were able to play at their pace, push the tempo, have the Bucks scrambling, and also more than anything, then have the Bucks tired and exhausted. The Pacers were picking up full court many different times and pressuring there. And yes, Dame went off early on, but once again, it kind of faded again late, and there wasn't a true second-tier guy that kind of took over other than maybe Lopez, who knocked down 6 3-pointers. So I thought the pace, Andy, was really critical. And then from there, I think moving forward, too, will be the way in which they guard Dame. And vice versa, what the Bucks do to try to slow down Pascal Siakam, who through the first several games was the best player in the playoffs thus far. No doubt about that, I think. Even in a loss, like I think you could argue that. And so those counters to the individual matchup now will be the most interesting thing.
Scott, remind me again, Pacers can pay Pascal Siakam more money than anybody else this offseason, is that right?
Yes, not only is it a kind of a weaker market with not a lot of teams having money, but they will have his bird rights, so they could match any offer theoretically that is out there. So that is not any great concern. It's just, can you being the Pacers and Pascal be on the same page, both in terms of years and money? The money shouldn't be too difficult, I don't think.
Do you know what that difference is? What they could pay them versus whatever, insert other team, based off the bird rights?
Not exactly. I think, if I remember right, the 5-year is over $200, but I have not broken that down quite yet.
Again, Scott Agnes with us here from Fieldhouse File. Scott, Andy and I were talking earlier about this. You don't often see like seed upsets in the NBA playoffs. It's not that prevalent. Obviously, I know we saw one last year, 8-1, but still, I felt like entering the playoffs, this Pacers, I don't know, maybe my goals for the Pacers like shifted. I thought at the start of the year, 45 wins, 5 or 6 seed, and a super competitive first round series. Like, you needed to win playoff games. You haven't won them in quite some time. Now all of a sudden I look at it and think, no Giannis, potentially no Julius Randle. Well, no Julius Randle, assuming the Knicks advance. Like, now I'm like, dang, like, this opportunity is golden. And I know I'm getting way ahead of things here when the series is tied at 1-1. But I just think these opportunities as a 6 seed do not happen on an annual basis. And I don't know. I've kind of shifted a little thinking, man, you really have got something sitting on a platter for you, and now it's time to take advantage of it as best you can.
Yeah, you see the opportunity now. You see the door being open and ajar right now. I was a little different with my expectations for me just getting in, probably as a 6 seed, probably 43, 44 wins was my first expectation. Then you had Pascal, and I think those moved up a little bit. 3 or 4 more wins. Ideally 4 or 5 seed, here you go. Mathurin's injury changed things a little bit, and that's still unfortunate that he's not out there, because he's a perfect matchup against these Bucks just in terms of competitiveness, his ability to get to the line, those sorts of things. But specifically this series, it would be a little bit of a disappointment, I do think, if they aren't able to come away with the series win, just considering the current circumstances and from what we've seen. I think the Bucks have the more, they do have the experience, they do have the leadership, they've been there, done that. The Pacers are that young team that's full of energy, full of life, that's trying to kind of just knock them off. And that's why, again, I think after game one, if you're the coaching staff, the message, you don't overcomplicate. It's sticking to your process. It's handling the adjustments. It's not allowing the moment to get too big. And if you handle all that and shots fall, which they're going to, we've seen that too often this season, then I think the Pacers have to feel comfortable with where they're at and where they're headed for the rest of the way. But again, like the coaching staff has also been stressing, it is a long series. This could go another couple of weeks. And therefore, you know, you can't get too high after a win like they just are coming off of either.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I can't wait. Game three coming up tomorrow at 5:30. Our coverage at 5 o'clock, and we're talking about that. Scott Agnes joins us here from Fieldhouse Files on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Through two games, how would you grade out Tyrese Haliburton? Not very assertive in game one, better but not great in game two. So how would you grade him out, and what do you hope to see from him in game three and four back at home?
Yeah, I'd probably go with a B- from what we've seen in the totality. That first game, you're right. You need more shots from him. You need for him to assert himself more. You need for him to have more of an impact on the offensive end, especially because he doesn't really have as big of an impact on the defensive end. So if the offense isn't flowing, if he's not impactful there, and I'm not just talking about points, then that becomes concerning. In game two, much more impactful, absolutely. I mean, you see the way in which the Bucks are guarding him. Now they're throwing two guys at him, often trapping him. They're pressuring him full court, trying to make him tired. But if he makes the right pass, the teammates can knock down the right shot, and that's what led to such a high assist number and a change in that. But you still want to see him shoot more. I think he was 3 of 7. You would happily take a couple more shots knowing, you know, if he finishes 5 of 9, 5 of 10, you are doing fantastic. Now, it's easier said than done, but I think there's ways in which Carlisle and that offense can get him a few more opportunities. And then again, I think it's on him to pick his spots, whether it's to tack a couple more times or it's to not hesitate or get into his shot, or by others knocking down shots early, maybe there's a couple more opportunities for him. But I do think he's going to have to do a little bit more offensively from a production standpoint in order for them to have success and win this series, no doubt.
Scott, we'll end with this, and thank you as always for the time. Unfortunately, part of the conversation after one of the more impressive playoff wins you'll see was the lack of availability in watching said game, yeah. Or I should say watching it somewhat seamlessly, whether it's the blackout, whether it's the ineptness of the Bally Sports app, anything from that conversation on Tuesday night that either you've learned or you just want to kind of add to, because I think there's a lot of different areas we could go with it, and frankly, I don't want to talk about it for too long.
Yeah, I just feel bad. You have the Pacers with their most important moment of the franchise, probably outside of maybe All-Star weekend, but in what, 4 years reaching the playoffs, and so many people just weren't educated that, hey, if it's not on ESPN or TNT, but it's on NBA TV, then it's going to be blacked out on your local streaming service because it defaults to Bally Sports in that situation. That's the prime example of when the league announces all the national TV games before the season. Most will include the NBA TV number in it. I will not, because of that, this exact reason. It limits the availability for some of your audience. And right now, just in a macro perspective, that's the one frustrating thing. If you're a basketball fan, is here's another platform that you have to have because it's not available on all the many of the streaming platforms. I believe it's only on DirecTV Stream. And then beyond that, which I have no answer for, is just some of the inconsistencies. Some people were able to watch it on their league pass. Some people were not. Some people were blacked out further out from central Indiana, whereas I believe it's about a 75-mile radius is actually what should be technically blacked out, I believe. But all in all, complicated, a frustrating experience, I know, for Pacer fans that either had to try alternatives, or like I heard from many, even friends, that had no awareness of this is they planned their night. They were going home. It was 8:30. They're not going out on whatever Tuesday that it was. And then they couldn't watch the game. So then they either chose to listen or just follow along online, which was obviously not the ideal situation.
It's just unbelievable. I said this to you yesterday. Just $20 to pay for an app and for so much functional issues with the app when you're paying $20 for one reason. This isn't Amazon Prime or Peacock whatever, where there's multiple, you know, viewing experiences. I'm paying $20 just to watch the Pacers, and I can't do that on a consistent basis. Just an absolute joke, but I don't want my blood pressure to rise.
Kevin, that's something we'll all be watching just in general from the league, too, with these national media rights and what that looks like moving forward. There have been times, because I keep track of this probably too often, I'll go on Prime, and like a month and a half ago, there were like three straight games that were on Prime, which I thought was interesting. I wondered if it was a test, of an experiment of getting the feed, putting it out there. Does anybody tune in? Is there any lag? That type of thing. I think Prime will be a real player in the next national media rights deal, which is ongoing negotiations, by the way.
Scott Agnes, Fieldhouse Files, 5:30 on Friday, 7 o'clock on Sunday. No issues for these two games in terms of the national TV and Bally, unless, I guess, you do dial up the app and it continues to crap out. Scott, thank you, sir.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
I Scott love Agnes right there.
I love how Scott is our resident, like, Bally Sports customer service rep.
I know. He literally is.
Got to get the Russian feed like Mark Dykton.
You know it.
Yeah.
Stream East, right, Mark?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's I how don't I've endorse been... this. I'm afraid my computer would blow up, but you're able to.
You have an Apple. You're okay.
I had several people reach out to me Tuesday night being like, no, that's where you need to go.
Yeah. No, you can get the Pacers feed and get the Bucks feed and get whatever you want over there.
You have an Apple over there, so you're okay. But if you have a Windows-based system, don't click on some of the pop-ups. Or, yeah, your computer might be going as fast as a turtle. So
Mark's in his
it is what
private
it is.
Browser on Stream East over
exactly
there.
Exactly right.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
About 10 hours away from things getting underway, we have tried to do the math earlier in the show. We're guessing around 10 Eastern. For the Colts at pick number 15 tonight, and a man that's been all over Jaff coverage from the Ringer, Ben Solak, joins us here. Ben, as we get to this point, we've exhausted ourselves into mock drafts and takes and, you know, all of that. What is one somewhat consistent take you've heard that you've sat there and thought to yourself, I don't agree with that at all?
Oh, that's a good question. I disagree with the idea that Michael Penix is going to go round one. You can throw Bo Nix in there if you want. I think Penix is kind of the more expected to go round one. He's a favorite to go round one on most sports books. You just see historically that if a quarterback is not a top 10 pick, we typically overrate how early he's going to go. We say, oh, for sure, you know, teams would rush into the teens to go get him, and they never knew. We say, for sure, teams would trade up at the end of the first round to get the fifth-year option. And sometimes they do, but oftentimes they don't. We overweight in the media teams understanding that their desperation to get a quarterback. It's not that the Broncos don't need one or the Raiders don't need one. They certainly do. It's the fact that teams don't like to draft players with second-round grades in the first round. And so unless these teams have true first-round grades, bona fide top 10, top 15 grades on Bo Nix and Michael Penix, they're going to play a lot more gamesmanship with the board. They're going to play a lot more moving around and a willingness to take them later in the draft. And so I am suspicious of the idea that Penix, quarterback 5 in this class, is going to go top 15. We just don't see that happen often enough historically for me to fully buy it.
Okay, obviously our audience here, you know, strong fandom towards Michael Penix, a good chunk of it based off his playing days at IU. Just the reason why you don't have Penix as a first rounder, all medical or more than that?
Medical is a part of it. Age is a part of it, right? And that's not to take away what Penix did. It's just to say that these are red flags. This is how the evaluation process goes. You have to be able to acknowledge some of the pitfalls, some of the sand traps when you're thinking about a prospect and all the worlds in which he might be successful here in the NFL. The other thing for Penix is that he played well at Washington. He was really benefiting from playing for Ryan Grubb, who's going to be an NFL offensive coordinator now, throwing to three NFL receivers in Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan, and Jalen Polk. All of those guys are about to be top 100 picks. He had an offensive line with multiple NFL guys on it, including a first-rounder in Troy Fontenot and a top 60, top 70 pick in Rosengarten on the right side, Roger Rosengarten. There's so many NFLers on this Washington team, and they helped Penix raise his floor a little bit. I think that, you know, a lot of quarterbacks would look really accurate if they could throw a 50-50 jump ball to Rome Odunze on the sideline. He will make them right. That's a luxury that guys like Caleb Williams didn't have and Drake May didn't have as the teams in which they were playing. Certainly those guys had some NFL talent, but not that caliber of NFL talent. And so to me, Penix, when you go and you watch the film, you just see a quarterback who benefited from his supporting cast and his offense a lot more than the average draft prospect does. And that just creates, for me, a little bit of uncertainty in the evaluation.
Benjamin Solak joins us from The Ringer, talking some NFL draft with him on this Thursday. He joins us on the Payless Liquors hotline. Patriots at 3. To me, that's where the draft really starts. What would you do if you ran the New England Patriots?
I would stay and take Drake May. In the event that I don't get to stay and take Drake May, then I have to consider J.J. McCarthy there at 3. And I think that right now, if you made me guess what the Patriots are going to do, I would put it 55% they're staying and taking Drake, 44% they're staying and taking JJ, 1% chance they trade back. They would only trade back for the craziest and biggest offer you've ever heard of. So to me, I'm staying and taking May, but I think they're pretty 50-50 on the quarterback that they're going to take. You've heard May for a lot of the process, which indicates to me that the scouting staff at the front office prefers May. And then recently, over the last few days, you've heard a lot of smoke from McCarthy, and that's as ownership, John Kraft, the son of Robert Kraft, the upcoming owner of the Patriots. That's how, as he's gotten more involved, you've heard more and more McCarthy buzz. So to me, McCarthy is ownership's guy. And whenever it comes down to GM versus ownership, I usually assume ownership's going to be the one to make the pick. So right now, I still barely lean Drake May. It's certainly what I would do if I was in charge. But in terms of what actually happens, I'm not fully totally there on J.J. McCarthy, but I'm very close to expecting that that's the pick.
And then, of course, you have all the scuttle on teams wanting to move up, you know, whether it be the Giants, Broncos, Vikings for that number 3 pick. I want to go two specific players, and if you believe in the hype over the last 24 hours, two guys, one on the offensive line, J.C. Latham, his numbers to be the first offensive lineman taken, Ben, went from plus 1,000 yesterday to just plus 160 today. Maybe that's the Chargers at 5. We shall see. So do you believe the Wild swing that he moves up in front of Joe Alt, and then Xavier Worthy, a guy that's popping up on a lot of draft boards that the Colts could even take at 15. Boy, it sure seems in the last 24 to 48 hours, he's kind of moved up 10, 12, 15 spots to be maybe more middle part of the first round. Do you buy into either one of those scenarios?
Latham is polarized. I understand why Latham has seen his odds move up. I personally bet on Latham to be first offensive lineman off the board. I bet on him to go to the Chargers because the Chargers' interest is extremely real. The thing is, I'm not sure how many outs there are if not the Chargers, right? If, let's say the Chargers stay at 5 and take a receiver. Let's say they trade all the way back. I don't know about too many other Latham teams in the top 10. I hear some Talese Fuaga, if not Joe Alt. I hear some Troy Fontenot, if not Joe Alt. But I don't hear as much J.C. Latham. And so I understand why Latham's odds are skyrocketing, but pretty much all those eggs are in one basket. And that's the Chargers staying at 5 or maybe executing a very small trade down and then taking J.C. Latham. And so I get the hype. I understand where it's coming from. It's just I wish there were more outs when I start talking about Latham to be the first offensive lineman off the board. Xavier Worthy, to me, is a more steady and slow burn, a more consistent thing, and accordingly, I think is a little bit more likely to be a legitimate rise. The entire process, since Worthy ran his 4-2-1 in Indianapolis at the combine a couple months ago, it's everybody you talk to has just been, oh, well, like, you know, we probably won't go round one, but, you know, the speed, oh, it's so tough to, oh, the record 40-yard dash, oh, it's everything. And then with every single week, there's just been a little bit more, maybe one team will go for him. I mean, a couple teams, I think, oh, I've heard a few teams. And it's just, okay, every single day, which is more and more teams seem like they want to be that team. They're willing to pull that trigger on Xavier Worthy early. He's also benefiting from the fact that both Adonai Mitchell, his teammate out of Texas, and Brian Thomas, wide receiver at LSU, are experiencing a little bit of a fall just because of some medical concerns, some off-the-field concerns. It seems like not every team has not doesn't have both A.D. Mitchell and Brian Thomas on their boards. And so Worthy is starting to be presented as a wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 option because those guys are losing a little bit of steam as well. I very much expect Worthy to be a first-round pick when all said and done.
Okay, Ben Solek here from The Ringer on the Payless Liquors hotline. Ben, The Ringer's mock draft, is this your name on it? All I'm seeing here is mock draft by The Ringer.
If you're on the site, there's 3 tabs. There's mock draft by Danny Kelly, mock draft by Ben Solek, mock draft by Danny Heifetz at the top. So mine is in the middle. It's got Solak
got
on it.
If you can't find it,
I got that sucker memorized. You can ask Solak.
Okay, so right now you've got the Colts taking Brian Thomas Jr. at 15. Am I seeing this right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and you have Dallas Turner and Quinion Mitchell both falling or going after the Colts?
Yep, that's correct.
That is like a mock combo I haven't seen a whole lot of. I've seen Turner certainly ahead of the Colts, and I've seen even Mitchell ahead of the Colts. Just general thoughts, I guess, on all 3 of those players, but why you went Brian Thomas for the Colts over Dallas Turner and Quinion Mitchell.
The most smoke I've heard is that the Colts really wanted to add a weapon. They want to add a pass catcher. I think that while the Texans in the division, really loud, big, bombastic, man, we believe in C.J. Stroud, we're trading for Stephon Diggs, look at us, like we have that young rookie quarterback, we're going all in. I do think the Colts internally are saying, hey, man, we saw Richardson for 4 games before he got hurt, and maybe not enough yet to fully put all of our chips in, but boy, howdy, that started to look good, right? And I was there at Colts camp in the summer, and I remember speaking to that offensive coaching staff about Richardson, I think they knew what they had. I think they know what they've got in the building in that player. I think they think they've got a real special talent. And once you have that guy, you really start investing on offense. And so to me, I'm led to believe that the Colts are looking to add a pass catcher, whether that's at tight end or at wide receiver. Brian Thomas fits Chris Ballard's measurable athletic thresholds. He's tall, he's long, he's fast. Like, he's a good fit for them. I don't have any specific connection where someone's told me, hey, the Colts really like Thomas, so I'm just connecting dots. But to me, those dots connect and they do make sense. The Dallas Turner pick would be interesting. I think that the Colts will wisely still address edge rusher, despite the fact that they did have, you know, top 5 sacks in the league last season. They had such a all hands on deck. Nobody was kind of that real elite win a one-on-one on every single snap guy. They had so many dudes with 8 sacks, 9 sacks. I think they know they need to add to that, need to add star talent. This is not the draft I would want to do it in, frankly. Like, I just, any of the 3, Jared Verse, Dallas Turner, Lazulati, they have their issues, they have their red flags. I'm not sure you're getting a guy who's like a perennial 12-sack dude. And right now, for the Colts, you don't need another 8-sack guy. You have enough of those guys. You have too many mouths to feed at that point. So this isn't the class for me where an elite edge rusher is what I'm looking for to kind of add to that pass rush. So Turner, I'm not too interested in them, in Turner for them. Quinion Mitchell now. Quinion Mitchell's a good ball player. And if they have presented this wide receiver interest conversation so that they can sit there at 15 and get a Terrion Arnold or Quinion Mitchell as one of those top 2 corners falls to them, that's good business by Ballard. That's good work. Because both of those guys are clear starters. There's CB1s on the outside. The Colts are in need of that. Mitchell would fit their athletic thresholds as well. Like, if they stayed at 15 and passed on Brian Thomas for Mitchell, I would call that a good pick, right? So I'm connecting dots with Brian Thomas, but I would not mind a Quinion Mitchell there at all.
Ben, great, great stuff. Appreciate how thorough all that explanation is. You guys have got a draft show on The Ringer, is that correct?
Yes, sir. It's The Ringer NFL draft show. It's our podcast, which all of our recaps will be. You can watch them on The Ringer NFL YouTube. It's going to be a fun week.
Ben, get a nap in today, my friend. Thank you.
All right, take care, fellas. Enjoy it.
Ben Solek right there from The Ringer. Really interesting stuff. And I appreciate, you know, although I might push back on some of that stuff, appreciate the detail and the thoroughness behind a lot of that. All right, I've said Terrion Arnold. That's where I would go at pick 15, the corner out of Alabama. Could certainly go in a different direction or two, particularly a pass catcher, Andy Sweeney.
Boy, I really want to go like defensive tackle or offensive lineman just because Ballard, we haven't
like
talked about it. I'm going to go wide receiver. I'm going to be an idiot here. I'm going to buy into the Xavier Worthy stuff.
Ooh,
is that
a change? I thought you'd go Brian Thomas Jr.
It is a change. I think Brian Thomas Jr. replaces too much of Alec Pierce. I don't think they're ready to do that. And, you know, if they go pass catcher, that's what everyone seems to think. You go Worthy, you add him to those weapons. I think you might even be able to move back a couple spots to get him and get one of those extra third-round picks. So, Quinion Mitchell. So we shall see what happens. We'll be talking about it all day here on The Fan. We're back at it tomorrow at 7 a.m. Have a good afternoon.